good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. A new report by an investigative group says a top South Sudanese military official is accused of using his position to amass millions of dollars.
He's involved in energy companies, mining companies, explosives sales, quite a few things in his private capacity that, haven't been previously disclosed to the public.
And the International Red Cross says more South Sudanese have fled to Sudan this year.
Most of these people move in are children and women. They come across the border, they're fatigued. They need nutrition, obviously. They need psychosocial support because they've been psychologically bruised, emotionally bruised.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new report by a Washington-based investigative group says a top South Sudanese army official has used his position to accumulate millions of dollars through his personal business while helping to orchestrate a conflict that has resulted into famine. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Lieutenant General Malek Ruben Riag, the SPLA's Deputy Chief of Defense Force for Operations, accumulated more than $3 million in his personal account between January 2012 and early 2016, according to the Sentry. It says Ruben made millions more than what a general in his rank earned during the 2014-2015 budget cycle, about $40,000. J.R. Maley, the Sentry's Senior Investigations Manager, says the report uncovers conflicts of interest and potential wrongdoing by Ruben in his roles at Mach International Services, a company that sells explosives to private companies operating in South Sudan, as well as Bright Star International, a mining company where Ruben sits on the board of directors. Maley says Ruben also holds shares in Jubilee Bank.
So he's involved in, energy companies, mining companies, explosives sales, quite a few things in his private capacity that, haven't been previously disclosed to the public. And some of these, commercial activities really deserve a lot more scrutiny because they appear to demonstrate, maybe pretty significant conflicts of interest.
The South Sudan Constitution prohibits constitutional office holders from engaging in personal business outside of their professional capacity while in office. The report by The Sentry, co-founded by American actor George Clooney and John Prendergast, founding director of the Enough Project, cites corporate records, letters from international companies doing business in South Sudan, and UN reports to make the case that Ruben used his senior position to strike exclusive deals to enrich himself. The report questions the legality of Ruben's role in Mach International Services, the company he controls, which sells explosives to private companies in South Sudan. The Sentry alleges that Ruben exploited a conflict of interest and possibly broke the law by directing exclusive deals through his role in the military with a number of foreign companies, including China New Era and China Wuyi. China Wuyi responded to the Sentry, saying the company required the approval of the SPLA Engineering Corps to source the explosives needed to operate a quarry. Maley says in order to get explosives to operate a quarry, you must go to the SPLA Engineering Corps.
The SPLA Engineering Corps says, well, you need to buy explosives from this company, Mach International, and that's the only company you can buy from. And it turns out Mach International is beneficially owned by Malek Ruben Riag. The money was going into his account from these sales. So what you have there is the military in which Lieutenant General Malek Ruben Riag holds a senior position directing business his way, and that seems to be a massive conflict of interest.
China Wuyi tells the Sentry it was instructed to make payments to Ruben and gave Ruben six checks worth more than $116,000 payable to him, which were later deposited in his personal bank account. The report says China Wuyi also wrote two additional cash payments to Mach International worth more than $13,000. The Sentry says Ruben is not only the prime beneficiary of profits through Mach International, but as a former employee of the SPLA Engineering Corps, he oversaw the country's approval process of similar transactions, creating a major conflict of interest, and possibly broke the law. Attempts by VOA to reach Ruben by phone have been unsuccessful. The accusations come as Ruben was promoted to the SPLA's Deputy Chief of Defense Forces for Operations, Training and Intelligence. Again, J.R. Maley.
So he is someone who is being promoted and rewarded not someone who's being held accountable for his involvement in suspect and pretty horrific military activities.
A January 2016 UN panel of experts report identified Rubin as being one of the leaders who planned the offensive in famine-stricken Unity State and oversaw its execution since January 2015. In April, a panel of experts report indicated the famine in Unity State, predicted for 2 years, was a result of protracted conflict and the cumulative toll of repeated military operations by the government in southern Unity as early as 2014. Famine was declared in Unity State counties in Leer and Mayendit in February. Fighting between South Sudan's government, led by President Salva Kiir, and opposition forces led by former First Vice President Riek Machar, has displaced nearly 4 million people from their homes since the conflict began at the end of 2013. The Sentry says, at its core, the conflict is a battle for control of state assets and South Sudan's abundant natural resources, including large oil reserves. Ayan Vior, VOA News, Washington.
Fighting and food insecurity is something South Sudanese have learned to live with, but conditions are particularly harrowing for the disabled and elderly. A new report released by Human Rights Watch says the elderly and people living with disability have been targeted and abused by warring parties, often because of their inability to flee conflict zones. VOA's Jill Craig has the story from Nairobi.
35-year-old Peter Bolwall lost his left leg below the knee during fighting against Sudan in 1994. He now lives in a UN-protected civilian site in Juba, where he says life is not easy.
Before when the conflict erupted, it was a bit better because the disabled person is not like able person. When the thing becomes tough, it is difficult for a person with disability to cope up with this situation and also to survive in the way that other people can struggle for their life because of war.
Human Rights Watch says elderly people and those with disabilities are particularly vulnerable to the effects of conflict that began in December 2013, citing numerous documented instances of people being shot, hacked to death, or burned alive in their houses. Jonathan Pedno is HRW's South Sudan researcher.
Civilians have been and continue to be attacked by the parties. Now, if you're not able to flee ahead of an attack or when the parties come to your house or come to your village, you're automatically more vulnerable to abuses.
Pedno says their caregivers are also more vulnerable.
Now, one also needs to remember that when you're fleeing an attack, when there's bullets flying all around you, it's often very difficult, even for relatives and family members, to carry someone with a disability. It obviously slows you down. So we've had also cases of people with disabilities who have been telling us that they actually asked their relatives to leave them behind because they didn't want to slow them in their flight.
But Pedno notes there is evidence of commanders sparing the elderly and those with disabilities in some situations. He provides an example from February when Wau Shaluk was taken over by government forces.
One of the commanders who was in charge of the SPLA soldiers there ordered his forces to take care of the people with disabilities. And they were not only brought in one specific place, but then provided also with food and water by the soldiers. And that is interesting because it also contradicts heavily, claims by the parties that often the crimes that we are witnessing are the result of bad apples, that they are the result of indisciplined soldiers, and that the chain of command inside the SPLA is so broken down that we can't possibly control the soldiers. And I think those examples show exactly the contrary. It shows that when the SPLA wants to act in a manner that is respectful of international norms and international law, it can.
Human Rights Watch says it interviewed more than 45 elderly people and those with disabilities in displacement sites in Juba and Malakal, as well as in parts of Unity State, where the UN declared famine in February. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Meanwhile, tens of thousands of able-bodied South Sudanese women and children have crossed the border into Sudan since the beginning of this year. The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies say the large influx of South Sudanese crossing into Sudan has put a huge strain on aid workers there trying to provide refugees with food, water, shelter. Nabil Biagio has this story for VOA from Juba.
More than 137,000 South Sudanese have crossed into Sudan since January. That's already more than the 131,000 that arrived during all of 2016, according to the refugee agency UNHCR. Most South Sudanese refugees in Sudan are sheltering in camps in White Nile State, East and South Darfur States, and West and South Kordofan States. When fighting broke out earlier this month in the former Upper Nile State's Kodok area, another 20,000 fled to Sudan. Michael Charles, head of the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in South Sudan, says most women and children who make it to Sudan are hungry and exhausted.
Most of these people moving are children and women. They come across the border, they're fatigued. They need nutrition, obviously. They need psychosocial support because they've been psychologically bruised, emotionally bruised.
Charles says his agency is working around the clock to provide basic life-saving services to the tens of thousands of South Sudanese who have arrived in Sudan.
So on the other side, the Sudan Red Crescent is working with other agencies, with the UN, UNHCR, to provide the needed items, food, clothing, shelter, water, and really that psychological support.
Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the government is overwhelmed by the sheer number of South Sudanese refugees.
We started to treat them as citizens, but the reflux was too much, and then we said that they are refugees. We used to meet them at the borders to check for their health, to give them food, to give them treatment, because many of them come with diseases and so forth. After camping them, then some of them, because, you know, we were one country, they asked to go for some places to come to the Khartoum. We let them go. And others are still in camps.
Bilal says his government is doing what they can to help the refugees.
We are cooperating with the NGOs. We are cooperating with the United Nations organizations, WFP, UNESCO, and others, whatever, who are helping, we are working with them. But the help we are offering is far less than the need. We need more help.
Charles says the huge influx of refugees into Sudan not only stretches the agency's resources, but causes other problems. The crowded spaces the refugees must live in can breed diseases such as malaria and cholera. Charles says the agency desperately needs more money to help the South Sudanese refugees.
Currently, we've launched an appeal for 4.2 million Swiss francs, which is almost the same as 4.2 million US dollars, to target 63,000 people that are across the border. We can do more. We work through our volunteers in the whole of Sudan Red Crescent. There are 40,000 volunteers, and we are in a position to do more, to scale up on our action. But in order to do that, we'll need more funding.
UNHCR estimates that some 417,000 South Sudanese have arrived in Sudan since the conflict began in late 2013. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The World Health Organization says even though the DRC government has approved the use of an experimental Ebola vaccine, it does not mean the vaccine will be administered in remote northern Basiwali province. A spokesman for WHO says there has been no new cases of Ebola reported in South Sudan's neighboring country since earlier this month. He says unless new cases are reported, it is not likely the experimental vaccine from Merck would be used. There are currently only 14 suspected cases and 4 confirmed deaths. Health officials are monitoring about 100 people who may have come in contact with an infected person. The WHO spokesperson says it would be very expensive to conduct an Ebola vaccine campaign in northern DRC because it is so remote and because the vaccine must be stored at minus 80 degrees Celsius. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, residents and traders say a major road in Tombora State is now closed and it's affecting their business. Find out why when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think school children should be able to have any hairstyle they want, as long as it's well kept?
They should be controlled in schools. Schools should have regulations of what hairstyle they want. It's to keep a watchful eye, on what a school-going child should do and not do.
Children to be left loose to do whatever they want undermines the principle of discipline, which is key for education.
Some of them, they can't even care about their smartness of their children, and that can lead the school to look sharper. So to me, that question is no.
It's not about the hair, it's about the mind. As long as you teach them, they understand how life goes. I think we can give kids that freedom too.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Traders and residents in Najero County in Tambora State complain that the inability to use Najero Wau Road makes it impossible for them to receive essential commodities, including food, which normally comes through Wau. The Najero Wau Road has been insecure since clashes erupted in Wau nearly 3 years ago. The flow of goods has slowed down since the road became impassable for traders. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Arua.
The flow of goods has slowed to a trickle since the road became impassable for traders. Peter Moreno, a businessman in Najero County, says not being able to use the road linking Najero County to Wau makes life hard for business owners and citizens. Speaking in Arabic, Moreno says, now that goods are no longer coming from Wau, they rely on goods from neighboring Uganda and Democratic Republic of Congo. He says, in Najero, they have the problem of high prices. He says, they only bring goods from Tombra to sell to the local people with a lot of challenges. He says they get a sack of salt with 3,500 South Sudanese pounds and sell without any profit. Moreno says business is so bad that he and other traders are barely making enough money to survive. Traders in Budwe and Tombora states bring goods from Uganda through Democratic Republic of Congo, which they say is expensive because they must pay exorbitant taxes for transporting goods across international borders. Amjima Angelo sells tea at Niger Open Market. She says finding sugar for her tea-making business is a daily struggle. Speaking in Balanda, she says only very few items are readily available in her local market.
I only come to the market to get soap and salt.
Bazo Romano, a student at Niger Secondary School, says not using the road linking his county to neighboring Wau state impacts his education.
Lack of job, which is also important to students. The way close to Wau is also a problem to us, which make us not to get those things, even things like exercise.
He says an exercise book goes as high as 250 South Sudanese pound. Romano says he uses one exercise book for up to 3 subjects in school. Najero County Commissioner Balia Digido admits insecurity along the Najero Wau Road poses challenges to Najero residents.
Challengeable situation in the county have been the road network connecting Najero County to Wau State is not passable due to insecurity, thus making citizens of the county suffering from high prices, scarcity of goods in the market, coupled with the depreciation of our pounds.
Balia says he is working with the state government to solve the problems of Najero residents.
Apparently, we are working with the state government for revitalization or restorations of the roads, because this road is the only way that our citizens in Tombora State can use to sell their products to Wau State and other states too.
on the Najero Wau Road so goods can once again flow freely from Wau to Najero. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Arua, Uganda.
From Arua, we move to Torit, where community leaders in Imatong State say local youth are becoming a major security threat in the area. They say the youth, most of whom are unemployed, roam around villages at night and break into people's houses to steal. The leaders are asking non-governmental organizations to provide skills training to idle youth so they can find jobs. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
An investigator at the Torit Central Police Unit says police respond to at least 3 cases of burglaries a night, especially in Torit's Corton and Enkas neighborhoods. The investigator, who is not identified because he is not authorized to speak to the media, says police have arrested a few youths but did not want to provide a specific number. Community leaders say many youths are not in school. They have completed secondary school but cannot enroll for tertiary education because their parents cannot afford tuition fees. 19-year-old Torit resident Johnson Mubarak Francis wanted to train as an auto mechanic, but says his parents had no money for tuition. He says some youth turn to crime because they have no hope for the future.
What I just need to ask from our government of Imatong State, because some things will be done, organizations will be bringing a training, but no one can inform us that there is a training somewhere. That's because if we go there, no one can inform us. That's why you are just living like this. And what next event? Our people, our boys here, will be stalling, fighting, doing nonsense. You see, and it's no work.
Mubarak says, like him, most Imatong young men are interested in mechanical work but could not get enrolled. Speaking in Arabic, youth Thomas Ben says area youth need training.
Many youth in Imatong State have no skills. If the government or NGOs can train these youth in computer skills or auto mechanics, they will become better people. They will change their attitudes and behavior.
18-year-old Rosa Ehisa says rather than resorting to crime, young men and women should become creative. He's speaking in Arabic. Ehisa says after she realized her parents had no money to provide food for the family, she decided to take up a job at a local laundry shop where she washes other people's clothes.
I started this work in April because I know this will help my mother and father as well as other children because my mother and father are not working. I came to work so that I can help them. Here I'm paid 80,000 pounds per day. We should not look at this kind of work and despise it as work that is meant for foreigners alone.
Many South Sudanese will not take on work like Rosa's. Community leaders say some youth form groups where they plan criminal activities in Torit. Elias Otuare is a traditional chief in Torit.
They use at the moment grouping themselves, called the so-called peer groups, stealing things during the night hours. They are moving throughout selling irons. That is why some of my things, like the handle of the borehole, which was spoiled, they have taken. They use that money for cigarette and also feeding on that money.
Chief Otuare is calling on the government to do something to rescue these youth who are turning into criminals. But Otuare says parents should not be blamed for the criminal behavior of their children.
Some of the parents, due to this hunger, the father, if working, he will not be looking for the money which he is earning from the office. Because that money is very little, cannot even feed the house. Like, yes, he may be a messenger or a watchman and the cleaners who are cleaning. Some are earning 325 South Sudanese pound, which cannot even feed the home. Children will be left like dogs moving in the street.
Loki Steven, chairperson of the pro-government youth union in Torit, says the union is lobbying for training opportunities for youth from aid agencies.
What has brought all this is the issue of unemployment, coupled with the economic crisis, which has infiltrated the states as well as the national government. So we are really trying to seek some other ways of addressing these issues, identifying some causes, especially the one of carpentry, driving costs, we are in connection with certain organizations.
Stephen says if Imatong youth receive skills training and the tools they need to find jobs, they will become productive citizens of society. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turin.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A top South Sudan army official used his position to collect millions of dollars through his personal business interactions while helping to orchestrate a conflict that resulted in famine. That's according to a new report by a Washington-based investigative group. The Sentry says Lieutenant General Malek Ruben Riak, the Espiales Deputy Chief of Defense Force for Operations, deposited more than $3 million in his personal account between early 2012 and early 2016. It says Ruben made millions more than what a general of his rank earned during the 2014-2015 budget cycle, about $40,000. J.R. Maley, the Sentry's investigations manager, says his team found several conflicts of interest and potential wrongdoing. Ruben runs the Ruben Company, which sells explosives to private companies working in South Sudan, has a role in Mac International, an energy company, and Bright Star International, a mining company. The country's constitution bans officials from engaging in personal business outside their professional capacity while serving the government. The Sentry report cites corporate records, letters from international companies, and UN reports as evidence that Ruben used his military position to reach exclusive deals with the government. Tens of thousands of South Sudanese women and children have crossed the border into Sudan since the beginning of the year. That's far more than the number that fled to Sudan all of last year. The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says the large influx of South Sudanese crossing into Sudan has put a huge strain on aid workers there trying to provide refugees with food, water, and shelter. And finally, the South Sudanese have suffered from fighting and hunger for years, but it's particularly hard on disabled and the elderly. A new report by Human Rights Watch says these groups have been targeted and abused by warring parties, often because of their inability to escape from the fighting. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Banda by Dis Majos. We have been listening to Dis Majos with the song Banda. I am John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you sharing your evening with us. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kina ilu lor kongol.
little.